Hello, Wisdom and Wellness. Welcome to another episode. Thank you so much for joining me. Today, I have a special guest. We actually did some questions of what would you guys like us to talk about? And in the comments, I could clearly see that we have ignored the corporate girlies. So today, I have someone special. I've got Mathebe Molese, right?
Modise.
Modise.
The gag, yeah.
But it's an L.
L, I, and Soto is D. So it's like...
You know how many times I practice your surname to just get
really?
It wrong?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
What did you say? But you're a CA, yes. Turned entrepreneur, mm-hmm. and founder of Beauty on Tap and mm-hmm. TikTok queen. When I found your TikTok, I was just like, this girl has so much personality.
Aw, thanks. I can't believe you thought I was boring.
No, I didn't think you're boring, but you've got like, even when I see a gym, like you like this focused, I'm in my world. And even on like Instagram, you're like, on Twitter though, I can kind of see, yeah, no, there's like a lot. And then I found you on TikTok and then I was like stuck on your TikTok. I was like, this is so entertaining. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Booms.
Okay, let's start with some icebreakers.
Okay.
Okay. What's the song you listen to on your way here?
It was actually a gospel song. I was looking for a song from Bongi and Colin,
okay.
but it's gone. I think it's off iTunes or what is it? Apple Music.
Yeah.
So it was just playing their playlist.
Oh.
But I don't know the name of the song.
Oh, how did it go? Sing it. How
much? I don't even know. It's a gospel song. I was focused on coming here. You said I'm okay. a focused girl.
You were just focused.
I was just focused on getting here okay. on time. Yeah.
If I had to take your headphones while at gym, what songs definitely play?
Nige. Like, that's my, let's do this. Like, every single time I get to gym, that's the song I play because it gets me going. I listen to different things. I listen to R&B.
Because, yeah, that sounds more right because I thought you were going to say, like, Carrie Hilson.
No, not Carrie Hilson.
I love Carrie Hilson. Or, like, Ciara's, what's that song? 5, 4, 3, 2,
no,
1.
No, I listen to, like, Summer Walker and, like, chilled stuff.
Oh, no. Yeah. I'm, like... pumping hip-hop,
really?
Kanye West, Beyonce's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
No, I'm like,
no, I'm boo, boo, boo. Okay, one funny word to describe the corporate world and one funny word to describe entrepreneurship.
Corporate world is structured.
Okay.
And entrepreneurship is... entrepreneurship is unimaginable.
Unimaginable. Is that a good unimaginable or whatever the feeling of the day?
It's kind of like, it's actually more unexpected. It's not okay. what you think it is when you're not doing it. But when you're in it, you're just like, what is this?
Literally, because when I think of it, I'm just like, what is this?
Yeah.
Okay, movie. If you had to... name your entrepreneurship journey after a movie, what movie would it be?
The Intern.
That's my favorite movie.
Yeah. Like my friend the other day was like, oh my word, we were in New York. I've been watching The Intern, I think in 2015.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I can't wait for Beauty on Tap to be like this. That's my favorite movie.
Did you also do the whole, you know, like their aesthetic, like the IMAX and then the it's got like a...
like a warehousey feel.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I'm looking for new offices and that's exactly what I want.
Oh
so.
My gosh. It's literally my favorite movie because I'm like one of those, I'm not sure if I'm, so I move between, I'm going to have like this massive team and we're going to move into an office and it's going to look like what the intern looks like. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also, I prefer working from home and keeping my team like very, very lean.
Yeah.
So when I'm going the other side, I'm just like intern. And then I go back to actually lean.
I don't want
to
be home. I get it. Yeah. Sometimes I want to move back home and then I'm like, I can't because there's a lot of people. I can't have.
How big is the team now?
We have 17 people now. I can't have 17 people in my house. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do you work from home?
I kind of in between it. So I always think that if I don't go to the office, the team misses me. And then somebody whispered like, no,
no
girl.
Man,
it's fun when you're not there. So I don't feel bad anymore when I don't go in. So I go in probably like 3 times a week.
Okay.
And then twice a week, I'm like, yeah, but I'm going to go after this. So I kind of balance it out.
Okay. Mm. I want to know about and in as much as I'm going to talk about your business, I'm very interested in the person behind the business.
Yes.
Right? Like that's my favorite part. I always like to get behind the thinking. Mm-hmm. But when you were studying and getting into your career, I think at some point we all wanted to be CAs because we knew that if you want money, you've got to be a CA. And not all of us made it because that journey is like one hell of a journey. It's very, very tough. But what was the journey like leading to becoming a CA? And was corporate what you thought it was going to be?
So I've always been very, very structured. So when I was in school, I was like a high performer. Okay. I was like deputy head girl. I was just that girl, like homework on time, class monitor, prefect. And so I was always like a star performer. And then obviously I wanted to do the whole CA thing and I got to VITS and I was like, whoa, what is this? Because it challenges you in a completely different way. It challenges the way you think. The structuredness that you're used to, it doesn't work. I don't know. I don't know what works when you're studying CA, actually. I can't even tell you. And then I had to repeat my third year. And that was the first time I experienced failure. And it was a shock to, like, my parents, people around me were like, not you. Like, you're the girl, you know? And so that was the first time I experienced failure and I had to just take it on my chin. And even that year, whilst I was repeating financial accounting, I took on corporate finance as an extra subject just to, like, fill my time.
Because
you're doing one subject
Oh, one subject,
So I took another subject and I started tutoring. And then I did my fourth year and I kind of, like, didn't have to do subs, just went through. And then I did my articles. And my articles kind of took me back to who I was in school because then I could still be the high performer and, you know, the excellent person. So corporate kind of made me feel like I was back in school and I had to be that high performer. And I kind of expected it. It was what I expected it to be. There was nothing that, like, shocked me with corporate. I enjoyed it.
I want to go back to that moment where you said that was the first time you experienced failure. Do you think it's really the first time you experienced failure or failure that you could associate with? Because, I mean, you're, how old are you in third year? You're probably like 19, 20.
21-ish,
Yeah, like a lot has happened in life. Why does that moment stand out to you as the first time I experienced failure?
I think it's because it was visible failure. I think sometimes when you experience failure, it's very internalized and you feel it. Whereas if you held back a year at school, people...
Like
people
everybody knows.
You're not in the class. Why aren't you going to school? Oh, it's because I have to repeat. So I think you experience failure in life where you fail a test at school. Nobody knows your mark. You can keep it from your parents if you want to. So this time it was like big because it was visible to everyone. And there was kind of like shame that came with it. Also just because people's expectations of me were so high.
Do you think
so,
it's self-imposed shame?
I think when you... when you present yourself as somebody who's excellent and high performer all the time, people's expectation of you that point is high. So when you don't meet the expectations, then it kind of does disappoint people and they can't hide the disappointment. So I don't think it was like self-imposed or I was just experiencing it by myself. I think it was like, it was real.
My favorite story, not really my favorite story, but a story I always shared was that when I, and this is because I studied accounting, right? But I didn't finish, right? But I was doing well. So I'm not like a lot of people leave because it's hard or whatever, but I was doing well. Like I had figured out how I'm making it through this, you know? And so in grade eight, we hadn't started choosing subjects yet. I'm not an A student by nature. So for me, it's like, if it takes you 2 hours, it'll take me 6 hours. But I will die trying.
I get it.
And so I had this group of friends and my friends were like high performers, like A students. And I had to keep up because that's my circle of friends and I love them. And it was a good challenge for me. And so we were doing accounting and we all studied and we're going to do this test and we go and we write. And you know, accounting, like you leave there feeling like...
I aced it. My cash book balanced.
You know, if it balanced,
something, you've like done be nervous. Wrong.
And it was that kind of thing. We left the test room feeling excited or whatever. And we come back and the marks are coming out. And we had a teacher and she's an Afrikaans lady who just didn't care. And so she's just handing out the marks and she's calling out the marks like... Pagza, 80%, da, 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 like loud in class. And so I'm hearing all my friends are getting 80s, 90s, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, okay, which means I'm around there because I normally compete. And then she calls me, and at the time it was Amanda at school, and she goes, Amanda, 46%. And my that for me felt like my first failure, big public humiliation.
Yeah.
And I felt my whole world shatter. And unconsciously, I lived my life to prove a point of that moment that I'm not the failure. So I did extremely well in accounting. I chose it as a subject. I chose it as a whole career. So what I'm getting at is, for you, that moment of failure, did it change who you are? How has it impacted the way you do things? And how did it impact your life?
I think for me, it had a more of a positive spin.
Okay.
Because when I did my fourth year, I didn't struggle with anything. Everything was pretty easy for me.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, maybe being held back a year actually helped me, because it made me focus on the fundamentals. And it readied me then for fourth year, and then for board exams, obviously, as well, that you have to do in first year articles and third year to qualify.
Yeah.
So I took that failure as, oh, this actually prepared me to lay a better foundation for myself to make the coming years or whatever other things were coming after that much easier. So it was the first time I kind of felt like, oh, actually failure isn't that bad. It actually happens for a reason. And a lot of people in fourth year struggled and had to write subs and everything. And I was like, oh, if I hadn't repeated, I would have been one of the people who has to do subs. And failing fourth year advits is like, yeah, it's traumatic. You'd rather repeat third year than repeat fourth year. So I was actually quite grateful for that failure.
Sure. Have you ever done therapy?
No.
You've never done therapy?
Never.
Really?
Never.
Because I'm asking because I feel like you're so self-aware. So as you're talking, I'm like, oh, okay, there's a lot of self-awareness. You probably have been given the tools with how to deal with like failure, how to deal with the journey. Now, so how do you, and this is a conversation I was having with my friend when we were talking about your TikTok. It's like, she oozes so much confidence. Like, I wonder where she gets it from. Like, she's probably in therapy and she probably has her tools. But that that level of confidence that you have, in yourself, like, where does that come from? And I know that you have a whole weight loss journey where you lost about 50 kilograms. Were you always this person, even with the extra weight, or is it kind of part of the new you, lighter you person?
So I come from a family of like matriarchs. So my grandmother was just like, my grandmother was the girl. Like, she didn't get married. She had kids. She raised a whole family. And my grandmother used to affirm us like, all the time. Like, even my pinned, it used to be my pinned tweet. I think it still is. It talks about how my grandmother used to affirm me every day and tell me I was a chubby, dark girl with afro hair. And she used to tell me, you are the most beautiful girl in the world. And I went to a predominantly white school. And I always say to my mom, at no point in my journey at my school did I ever feel like I'm a black girl. Like, at no point. I was like, I'm one of them. I'm a person in this grade. There's nothing that sets them apart from me. We're all the same person. So I always grew up in an environment where I felt equal. I never felt less than or anything. And as a result, that's why I thrived at school. Like, I really thrived at school. Like, I enjoyed my school years so much. And I was the first female head of school.
Yeah.
And black, first black, sorry.
And you're in your mid-30s, no? You're in your early mid-30s.
36, sure. Yes.
So at the time, like, being a head girl is not really a thing.
Yeah, it's not a thing at the time. And I'm first black female who's given a chance to ascend to the throne. at a very white school, there were only 7 black kids out of a grade of 70. So I never felt less than or anything. I've always just felt like I am the girl.
Yeah. So now going back to that moment where you, because I think now, maybe things are a little different now because of what we see on social media.
Yeah.
Like, it almost feels like you have to look a certain way. You have to have certain hair. You have to have a certain body. You have to have a certain skin color. Like, there's an aesthetic for almost success, right? And at the time, what made you decide that, oh, actually, I'm about to lose 50 kilograms? Because the way you said, you grew up chubby, dark skinned, but you were happy with yourself. Like, you were content, confident, like, everything's fine. So what gets you to the point where you feel like, actually, I think I want to do something about my health or my weight?
It was when my mom had a chat with me. And said, it was after my 21st, I remember. And when I look back at my 21st pictures, I was wearing this dress and it just looked like a curtain. And she was like,
girlfriend.
Yeah. And I just started varsity, and in varsity there's Steers, there's McDonald's. I had a car. You're getting an allowance. You can buy all the junk food in the world
every day.
Yeah, homonate, like wah, wah, yeah. Like, you know. And she was like, "You're gaining weight very fast, like very fast." She's like, "Look at your 21st pictures."
It's like you're in your coat.
Look at this dress. Get bedspread.
We need you to show us. We need the picture.
So that's what kind of like made me say, actually, I want to be healthy. I want to live. I want to be healthy. I want to live a good lifestyle. I don't want to breathe heavily when I go up the stairs. Mm. I want to be able to do it. And that's when I started my journey. But I'm very obsessive. So
relatable.
I think, yeah, that's probably like a trauma response that I can't miss gym. If I travel, I pack my gym clothes.
I haven't gotten there. My trauma's not that deep.
No, my trauma's deep. So if I travel, I take my gym clothes. I don't skip gym. I go to gym, you know, 5 to 6 times a week. Yeah. So although it's been positive, it is a trauma response, which may not be healthy, but it turns out the results is healthy.
Yeah, sure. And do you see a difference between, in terms of mindset, between that girl, that 21-year-old girl, and who you are now, just based on the health changes that you have made?
So I was always kind of like very, I don't even know how to put this, and I don't think it has to do just with that change, but I was always very like structured and very hard on myself before.
Okay.
And I suppose this whole journey has made me a little bit more fluid.
Okay.
And even just getting out of corporate, the person I was then and the person I am now is very different. Like, I used to be very judgy in my 20s. Like, I'd be like, you guys are drinking and you're smoking weed.
Well, if you're getting AIDS all the time, of course you're going to be judgy.
So I used to be super judgy. Yeah. And my stance on life.
Were you a mean girl?
Yeah. People used to call me Tin Man. They'd be like, you show no emotion. Like, you're just the stoic. Yeah. Stoic, structured, do your homework, that are like very...
No excuses.
Like at school, at home, everywhere, I was just the stoic person. And now I'm just completely, completely different.
Sure. That's so hectic. And the fact that... But I'm so glad that you're able to show that awareness of being judgy. I think to a certain extent, I have judginess in me. But I think we grow and then you learn to...
Yeah, I think because you make so many mistakes along the way.
Yeah, but also it comes with being a high performer because you push yourself. We push ourselves, like whether your tummy aches or not, if you said you're going to do something at 7 a.m., you're going to do it. So when you see other people not doing it, it's like, well, if I can do it, why can't you do it?
Okay, I'm still judgy with that.
Then you're still judgy.
No, but I'm not judgy in terms of like lifestyle decisions. Yes. But in terms of
I'm judgy with that internally. Like I won't say it, but I'm just thinking, I'm just like, you're just a loser.
Maybe I am judgy because I like tell my team like, why are you guys eating KFC today? When are you guys starting gym? But it's because I want them to be healthy because I know what that has done for me.
You. Yeah, I agree. I'm literally the same. I have one of my team and she's young. She's like 23. And so I do feel like sometimes I have to call myself back because I feel like I'm hard on her. She's starting her gym life, right? And she said this, I think, last year. And I said, okay, cool, what have you done? And she's like, I'm still planning. And I'm like, okay, but now let's finish planning this.
Let's do.
And then it was January. And then she said, she's doing this. And I'm like, okay, but when are you starting? And I was talking to my trainer and he was like, and you'll let me know if you believe in this. He said, it's statistically... I don't know if he's right or wrong. For people who set their goals, right, in the beginning of January, if they haven't taken a step by the 18th of January, they most likely won't achieve them.
I don't believe in resolutions. So even
let's take out the resolution. Let's say vision board, goal, planning. Yeah. So people who've planned and said, this year, 2024, this is what I'm doing, but then don't start by the 18th, by the 18th of Jan, nothing has happened.
It's not going to happen. I would take it forward to, like, I don't believe in planning. I believe if you want to do something, just start today, start now.
Yeah.
I think if you say, I'm going to start in 3 months' time, then you're not serious about it. You're not going to start. Start now.
Do you have imposter syndrome?
I don't.
You know what I'm asking? Mm-hmm. So I was listening. I don't know if you know Rachel Rogers.
No.
So she's a brilliant author, but she's in more of my space. Brilliant author, and she wrote a book, We Should All Be Millionaires. And I read it, and she talks more about the mindset of being that. And so she was listing how imposter syndrome shows up differently, yeah. right? And she's listing so many ways. And I'm like, I thought I don't have imposter syndrome, but this is giving imposter syndrome. And it's not to say that I let imposter syndrome get in the way. But for example, and I spoke about this on another podcast, that I don't celebrate achievements. It's a form of imposter syndrome. And then I listened to another podcast this morning that was saying even perfectionism can be a form of imposter syndrome, because you make, like, things have to be so perfect. It's almost like it you leave like very little room
for error.
Yeah.
Perfectionism, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm like, but I get it from my boss when I was at the bank.
Yeah.
He was the CEO, obviously. And he was like pedantic. Like, he was just like, the shade of red is not right. Like, he was super pedantic. And I was like, maybe CEOs are pedantic. Maybe that's what I need to be.
To be, sure.
So I'm super pedantic and perfectionist. Like, this is not right. This is like very pedantic. But I think it's just striving for excellence in terms of brand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does that work for you in relationships? Not just romantic relationship, relationships as a whole, in your friendships, in your team.
So the one thing that I've kind of realized about myself is, or in the past, is that I felt that I have to show up all the time.
Yeah.
In relationships, and I need to be this perfect
partner
to whoever it is, a friend or, you know, mother, daughter, whatever it is. I always felt I have to be this perfect person. And the pressure that puts on you is just immense, and it just fatigues you so much.
Yeah.
Constantly having to show up in a way that people want you to show up.
Mm.
And the one thing that I've kind of flipped over the past few months is that I'm going to show up how I think I can show up for you. But I'm going to show up. And it might not necessarily be the way that you want me to show up, but this is as much as I can give in the moment.
Sure.
But I will make an effort to show up. So the perfectionism in terms of relationship, I've completely switched off.
Yeah.
I've kind of gotten to a place now where I'm like, I can do what I can for you in the moment. And that's helped me a lot.
Yeah, I think so. I think what ruins relationships is that we think we have to show up that way, in a perfect way.
Yes.
And with that, it gives little room for a relationship to be intimate and real.
Yes.
Because then everybody's now on guard. Because if you're showing up perfectly, ticking all the boxes, then I feel like I need to always show up. And that's not relationship. That is not intimacy. Like, there has to be room for, hey, actually, today I can't. And it should be okay.
Yes, I need you to be okay with that.
Yeah, like, I remember the first time a friend, like, said to me, not the first time, but when I got it, and I had asked her to do something, and she agreed, right? And it was something important. Then she came back and she said, no, actually, I can't do it anymore.
Mm.
And she didn't give like a long excuse or reason. She just felt like she didn't want to do it anymore.
Mm.
And I was like, this is such an exhale moment for me, because this relationship has given me the room to be able to say, I can't do it.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And that's it.
That's enough.
Because life sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, life. And just that constant perfection is exhausting.
Yeah.
So just saying, I can't do it today, sorry. It should be okay.
It should be okay.
Yeah.
I know you don't have the picture of I'm a Black woman in the space, but you were an EA, right? Executive assistant to the CEO of the bank.
Yes.
That is a whole lot of...
big job.
You basically were the CEO of the bank, basically.
It was a big job, yeah.
Yeah. How did you navigate that confidently and not feel like everyone is questioning your right to be there?
So first off, I didn't have therapy. So I had a form of therapy because I had an executive coach.
Okay.
Who helped me navigate that role, because it's a scary role.
Yeah.
And I started the role at the beginning of COVID. So it was like, literally I moved into my office and then it was like, go home, like go work from home. So, I think for me, the one thing that helped me was that I was very social at work.
Okay.
So I knew a lot of people.
Okay.
I was in social committees in the various departments I was in. And I was an analyst. And when you're an analyst, you engage with a lot of people in the bank. So as I moved around, I always kept roles for 2 years and then I moved around. I've never...
you got bored.
Yeah, I just got bored. Like, oh, I'm bored of this. Can you move me around? Okay. But they liked it because they were like, you're exploring. You're still...
So job I knew rotation.
So I knew a lot of people. So when I got to the role, it was fairly easy just because I had formed those networks before. So talking to people, getting stuff from people, passive mentoring as well from people really, really helped. So I think in the role, I was okay.
Yeah.
And also the lady who was before me was really helpful as well. Beth. She held my hand. She checked in quite a lot as well. So it was I think the only thing that was difficult about that role was that at the time I took the role, Beauty on Tap also just started growing because of COVID.
COVID, yeah.
So I had these two very demanding roles because at the time I was doing Beauty on Tap by myself.
Yeah.
I was like the order packer, the IT person, everything. And I was the EA to the CEO. So that was the only thing that was really difficult in that time.
Before we get into Beauty on Tap, do you consider that a strategy for those struggling in corporate? Because I feel like, and I can't answer these questions because I did corporate for a year, but even then I was in like a little box where I didn't spread my wings, like I felt completely out of place. I was a shell of myself. Mm. But do you consider that a strategy of navigating corporate as a Black woman? Because I think a lot of Black women that I engage with feel out of place. They feel like, where to from here? I can't speak up. I can't ask for a raise. I can't even ask to be moved around.
Mm.
For you, do you think the strategy is in building the relationship, and not in a malicious way, I would say, I'm getting to know you because I'm trying to get out of this.
Mm.
But do you consider that an important aspect of getting the best out of the corporate world?
Yeah. So the advice I always give to people, because people also ask me about corporate because of the EA role I had to the CEO. I always say to people, work hard.
Yeah.
Like, be the person that people want to work with because you're brilliant. So,
in life, Angie.
Yeah, just work hard. Be that person. Like, don't leave when it's time to leave. Chale time.
Like, just like the first thing in your bags.
Put in that extra time. And the second thing I always say to people is go to social events because that is where you always network and meet people. And, you know, you'll be chilling with your team leader and then they'll be like, oh, this is actually the credit executive. Mm. Meet Matebe, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I always say, put your hand up for things. Like if they want an MC for something, put your hand up. That's literally how I got exposure. Is I was MCing a conference. And then that's where execs saw me and they were like, oh, she's actually quite funny and she has a personality. And they came to talk to me. So I always say to people, be social, get to know people and ask to move around. Like put your hand up for stuff. Like, let me do that. I used to do like extra stuff, like reports. Mm-hmm. They'd ask for a volunteer.
And not expecting money.
Not expecting money.
Yeah.
Because that's the stuff that has to be done within the department. So always go the extra mile and meet people. I know a lot of young Black people are scared in corporate to just meet people.
Yeah.
But it's honestly the best advice that I can give to anyone in corporate.
Do you think we're in a scary space within the workspace where people are, and I love what you mentioned, that you would pick up your hand and say, I'll do this, and not ask for money.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience has been people are always leading with, how much?
Yes.
What do I get out of it? And it's like, as someone who hires people and who has projects, that for me is a red flag. It could be a wrong thing. But as soon as you start with how much am I getting?
Yes.
What time do I finish?
Yes.
Who's doing that? It's like, okay, so you're just here for your own needs. Yeah.
It's good to know how much you're going to get. I always say if your outcome is money, then it's not what's purposed for you.
Mm.
If you're somebody that's gunning for money in something, it means you don't love
what
you're doing.
Yeah.
Then you need to rethink your career. So if I interview someone and at the end of the interview, they say, how much am I getting? Thanks for interviewing. We'll be in touch.
Yeah.
So don't lead with money. Like lead with, is this what I want to do? Ask questions about more the role. See if you fit in the company culture. Is it where you fit? If you're going to ask about money,
it's just awkward for everyone, especially in the beginning.
Yes.
And it's not to say don't ask for money. We should ask for money.
We should ask
for raises, but also have we put in the work?
Yeah.
Can you back up what you're asking for?
Yeah.
Let's get into Beauty on Tap. So I bought my first, I think I bought a basket.
Nice.
On COVID. That was my first purchase.
Yes.
And I was like, I don't even know what made me buy. I think I didn't even need a basket. No, something influenced me, Jay, on social media. To buy on Beauty on Tap. I think people were starting to make noise about it. But how did a Beauty on Tap start? And when you started it, Did you think it would be this business that people are begging for product every week?
Or
every week it's like, I'll see pastry again. Or was it for you just a part of you, an itch you wanted to scratch? Like there's this creative part or this beauty part of me that I just want to, you know, just get into.
So growing up, so I have a maths mind. Mm-hmm. My late dad was like a maths genius.
Yeah.
So I do have a mathsy kind of side of my brain.
Yeah.
But I think the majority of my brain is creative.
Okay.
So I grew up wanting to be like a fashion designer. Yeah. And my mom was like,
girl, not with that brain.
You're going to work at a bank. You're going to work at R&B. My mom told me you're going to work at R&B. And that's where I landed up.
Sure.
Yeah. So I always had a creative side. And so I always used to start little businesses and try myself out. And when I started at R&B, my friend was getting married. And I was like, oh, we need to find a makeup artist in Cape Town. And we couldn't. And I was like, it would be cool if we started an app that could find a beauty service anyway. And that's literally how it started. And I was like, let me do it. I mean, we all have ideas, but we kind of like, oh, it would be cool.
Someone else.
And I was like, actually, I want to do this. And I shared the idea with a colleague and he's like, I'll partner with you. Let's do it. Started the app as a finder service. My friend actually posted something today, like a throwback of when we were doing a visit the service provider
tour. Oh, yeah. To like
check. He was testing out salons.
Mm.
And we had a product
side.
This is in
20?
This is in 2015.
Okay. Yeah.
This is in 2015. And then on the app, there's a product side. So people are like, actually, we like the product side, but I don't want to buy different things from different people. Can't you guys just put it on one website or on the app?
Yeah.
And that's how we built the website. So it started off as a finder beauty service. Then it was like a natural skincare and hair care website.
Yeah.
And then we just started adding more and more brands.
Yeah.
And then in COVID, it just
blew
off. Yeah.
So when you started, you weren't trying to make money. You weren't saying, I'm building a side hustle. Like you were content with your life and you just needed to solve your friend's problem. And if someone's going to do it, I'm going to be the one who does it.
And I mean, it wasn't making money for like the first 2 years.
At all. Were you losing money? Like, were you putting in your own money?
I was losing money. I'll never forget a time I forgot to stop a Facebook ad.
So humbling.
And I just saw like so much money go off my account. And I was just like, oh my gosh, these are like growing pains. But for years, it didn't make money. I wasn't living off it. That's why I was just side hustling it. I just really enjoyed doing it. I enjoyed the creative side, the marketing side of it.
So when did it click for you that, and I know COVID, the sales went up, but that could have been, and tapping into your brain, I can understand that you could have said, this is just a period because people are on their phones and it will pass, right? Mm. But when did you actually think, maybe this is an important aspect of my life? Like, this could be an actual business.
Yeah.
And I'm asking because before that, you were not making money. In fact, you were just keeping it
just
going.
Yeah.
You know? And I think a lot of people start like that. Business does start like that. You could have a good 5 years where
you're just not making money.
Mm. And a lot of people say, hey, it's not working. Let me leave this thing alone.
Yeah.
And maybe it could have worked out. Mm. And then other people hold on too long to things that will never work out.
Yeah.
So how do you distinguish that let's stick it out?
Yeah.
There's something here.
I think I realized when during COVID we were delivering very fast.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, there's a gap in the market for like super fast cosmetic delivery.
Sure.
And niche skincare. Like nobody was bringing together like really great niche brands on one platform.
Yeah.
And so I knew like we're delivering fast and people are enjoying this and we have great brands. So we need to keep this going post COVID as well.
Okay.
And we just started adding more brands and delivering even faster and faster. And my thing was that we need to keep what our value proposition is here. Because a lot of businesses grew during COVID and then plummeted.
Yeah.
But I was really, really... I was really, really strict about not growing too fast because there's so many businesses that just shot up and they couldn't deliver on that.
Yeah.
And so we had to kind of like grow in steps and say, we're only restocking 10 hair pieces today
because that's
the only deliveries we can do.
Sure.
So I knew that this is what the business's value add is. Mm. We need to keep it. And that whole value add of fast delivery and shopping your faves on one platform is what the business is and yeah. what it's become even now.
That makes so much sense. And I think I get to understand your business a little more now, because I know there's a I forgot which business this is, but it's got to do with, they offer a product, but they know that their product is not what people are buying. People are buying the design.
Yes.
So in essence, they are a designing business.
Yes.
So with you, in as much as you have this shop front, this you call it an e-tailer.
Yes.
What you are selling is fast delivery.
Yes.
And everything is based on fast delivery.
What we sell, efficiency. That's what Beauty on Tap is.
Sure.
Yeah.
So for you, it doesn't matter. Because I mean, if you could sell 25 hair piece on the day, because you see that this 10 is moving fast.
Mm.
But if you knew that more money means slower delivery, then it's not worth it for you.
I know that, but I also know demand. So on Black Friday, we tell people this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You're not going to get your delivery the next day. It's going to take a week now to get your delivery.
Yeah.
So there's that transparency as well. But I'm very nervous about the pastry restock coming up now. But that's how we work.
Just like...
crash the website. So for me, that efficiency is so important. And that's what I talk to the team about like every week. Like, we cannot drop the ball on deliveries.
Sure.
And that's what I'm super strict about. The team knows. If I walk in and there's orders waiting, I'm just like, what's going on?
Yeah. Like, did someone die here?
Yeah. What's going on?
Like, what's happening?
Homonad.
So knowing that delivery is your thing, why did you open a shop? Because you didn't need to. Did you?
I did. In a way. Because our whole thing as well is community. We listen to the community.
Mm.
If people ask for brands, they get them. Like,
do you believe in that? Because this guy, he's, forgot his name. He just wrote a book now.
Mm.
Producer. Rick Rubin. Mm. Rick Rubin says never listen to the audience. But I mean, he's speaking from a point of he's a creative, and he's produced the biggest song, like Beyonce, Rihanna.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he says you don't create for the audience. You create for you. And I've always been two ways about it, because my husband's like, I get it. And I'm just like, I don't know. It's kind of giving self.
Get it. Because you can't, if you create for the audience, you're never going to satisfy everyone.
Yes.
So the one question I always ask myself is, if I didn't own Beauty on Tap, would I be a Beauty on Tap customer?
Oh. Okay.
And then the answer is always no. Yeah. The answer is always no. And
Always.
Yeah, because I'm honest with myself.
You've never had a moment where you sat and be like,
So I'm always like, would I have taken notice of it?
Ah.
And then I'm like, probably not.
Sure.
Because I wasn't a skincare kind of person before.
Okay.
I'd probably still be going to the place where I used to buy skincare.
Okay.
And I always say, what is it that I need to do to make sure that a Matebe out there becomes a Beauty on Tap client?
Sure.
So don't, you can't get high off your own
supply.
Off your own
supply. So you always lead with that would I be...
Would I be a customer? And you can't listen to the audience. You're going to be changing your business all the time.
Yeah.
And we make mistakes. Like, we just change something on a product and it's like, actually the audience was wrong.
And then you just like...
Even they like, sorry, we were wrong. Please change it back. I'm like,
that's funny.
Yeah. So I get it from both sides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How has your corporate and finance background served you, or is serving you in your business?
Very well. I think it's the one thing I do well in the business.
Okay.
Just because of the cash flow aspect and the financial management aspect, I think is super important to a small business.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of that prudence, I think it served me really well. And I always encourage people in the team to start businesses.
Really?
Yeah.
Is your business so well systemized that even if they all leave and start their own businesses, your business will still thrive?
So I always tell people when they join, I'm like, you shouldn't be here in the next 5 years. Like, you need to grow yourself. Like, your retirement plan shouldn't be Beauty on Tap. It's my retirement plan. No, but I encourage people to grow in themselves.
Yes.
And I know, I talk to the team all the time. They have performance reviews and they have their own aspirations.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of them are entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
Very entrepreneurial. Okay. So I always ask them, what do you want to start?
Yeah.
Like, you have me available to you. I can mentor you. Start with Beauty on Tap as your customer. So... our marketing lead is my social media manager. Mm-hmm. So she handles my socials, she handles my events and everything. So she's starting her own business and I'm her first client. And
sure.
If people want to sell stuff on Beauty on Tap, they have the opportunity. So I'm very supportive of people's own aspirations. Yeah. I don't think that you should hug people because you won't get the best out of them. So
that's such an interesting take, because I've always, I get that part, but I've always felt like a part of me felt like I've failed as a business owner when someone leaves to go start their own thing.
Yeah.
Right. I felt like, couldn't I keep them? Is my business not going where it's going? Like, you understand the mindset. So how do you get that mindset where your goal is for them to leave and not feel like my company will suffer? Because now you have to retrain people and you need to rebuild the culture. And there's a lot that, like, human resources is so, so hard. Important. Like, you can see, like,
you're so stressed.
I'm so stressed.
Oh, my God, how can she do
that? Yeah, like, you literally have a mindset of, girl, you've got 5 years. Okay, what business are you starting? And I get that. I'm for that. But I've found myself being, like, burning out and doing that, okay, you invest in people, you mentor, and then when they leave, I have to start over.
Mm.
So what mindset do you get into to make sure that there's that, because it's a way of giving back, and like you said, you don't want to keep people who don't want to be here, and you want people to reach their highest potential. But also, what about your retirement plan that needs skills?
That needs skills. So that's why I think it's important to build teams versus having individuals in certain roles. So it's important to have teams. So if somebody does leave, then there's somebody to step into that role. So succession planning is super important. But, you know, I've seen what happens in corporate when you have people who've been hugging roles for 20 years. Like, it discourages young, energetic people from staying in the business. And it kind of makes your business so outdated. Like, you're just not keeping up with trend and technology, and things are just slow, and you keep your old ways. You don't keep up with how people are doing things.
Sure.
So I've seen what hugging onto employees
can do
to your business. Yeah. It also kills the culture. You want new, fresh blood constantly coming in and giving ideas. And I really want to keep the Beauty on Tap team small. I don't want it to be this huge corporate.
Okay, so for you, it's like lean team.
High performance. So, I've just seen what it does to companies. Like, the companies that close down because...
about the same admin lady.
Yes, exactly.
Who keeps making the same mistake. And everyone's just like,
and no one's telling her. Because she's the boss. Like, she's been in her role for 20. So you can't tell her anything.
Yeah.
So that's why I always say to people, I want you to be entrepreneurial in your thinking, because that's when you bring your best self to the business every morning.
Yeah, you want other leaders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're doing their thing.
The other day you put out... there's two TikToks of yours that I really, really like. The one was, business is hard, right? What has been the toughest challenge that you've come across, and how did you get through it? Did you ever get to a point where you say, actually, I can dust off my qualifications, call my contacts, and I'll be fine? Like, what got you? What is it, and what got you through it?
What's been super hard for me? Opening a store was hard.
Okay.
Because you're a black female.
Yeah.
Like, no one trusts that you can pay rent.
Ah.
Yeah. It was really, really hard. Like, I'm always, and that's another thing about being your best self where you work in corporate. My old team, the property team at R&B, helps me so much. Like, I don't think, if there's anything I need, they help me on the spot.
Sure.
And they basically help me with getting into... to Mall of Africa.
Yeah.
They put me in touch with people. They told me she's a good person. She's good for it. She used to work here. I think obviously because I also worked there, then they're like, oh, she knows something. So it took a lot to get space at a reputable mall. And thank goodness those contacts came through. Yeah.
It's so wild to me that we just saw, like, when you think opening a shop is hard, I'm thinking of the... because I had a salon and for me, but I was like 22, 23. And for me, the hardest thing was the construction team and meeting deadlines.
Yeah.
And what do you call when you, the shop fitting.
Yes.
Like, that for me was
hard.
It was hard because I'm a 23-year-old little black girl that nobody's taking seriously.
Yeah.
And that for me is hard. So when you're saying to me, opening a shop is hard, I'm thinking, yeah, she probably had it with the shop fitting, but I didn't think that as a black woman, you have to prove why your shop can be in a mall.
Yes. And even though you have track record of an e-commerce website that's been doing
working,
well, you still have to prove yourself more. So that really, really opened a lot of doors for me, that sure. network of people. And even with the next doors, they still help me.
Sure.
Yeah.
And did you ever feel like it's not worth it? Because like I said, you did need to open a store, but your business could have still thrived and continued if you didn't have a store. Did you ever feel like, I'm going to quit, or that mindset that tapped in again that, no, I said I'm going to do it, so I'm going to do it?
I was always going to do it. Even if I had to land up at a smaller center,
sure.
I was going to do it, because people always say they want to touch the products. And we even under forecasted what the store would do. So I think opening a store was a very good move. And I'm always just very grateful, because I always say that this is a very purpose-driven journey, because everything just seems to come together.
Together, yeah.
And I'm always like, when is it going to unravel? I'm just
like, what is it burning? Like, what is it like?
Why is the journey so perfect?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not perfect. It has its imperfections, but...
You're graced for it.
I'm graced for it.
Yeah.
Everything just... I always look at it like these building blocks just coming together like a puzzle and working out. So always grateful that things work out in the end.
You did but I can't find it anymore. And you were talking about, I think being in your mid 30s and not being not being married and having kids. And I think that was the goal. That was the dream for you. And I don't know if I call it a disappointment, but dealing with that. And someone actually even asked it, that how do you deal with the, you're happy, you're grateful, you're excited that your career is going really well and you're thriving and you've got everything that you need, but there's still this part. And like you spoke about that, yes, I didn't get married when I thought I was going to get married. Like, how have you managed to remain content and excited about your life as a single woman?
So I remember
desiring marriage.
Yes.
Yes.
I remember having a conversation with my best friend, and she said, I know sometimes you feel like you haven't had the baby showers, but we have your baby showers all the time. Like, you've given birth to this brand.
Sure.
And we've attended launch parties. We've been there for your little baby showers. And she says, I also want those kind of baby showers. I also want to start a brand and have everyone come and celebrate. And she just said, life happens for people at different times.
Yeah.
And she's like, I've had my kids in my 20s and early 30s, and now late 30s going on, I want to start my own thing.
Sure.
And she's like, you've done that. So you can now journey on the kids and marriage thing, and it all happens when the time is right. And I always go back to that conversation, because it made me feel so comfortable in my journey. Like, oh, I've had my baby showers. I've had points where everybody's celebrating me and happy for me. So that's what kind of changed my stance, that just take
relax.
It easy, relax. Yeah. Like, it's all happening. And sometimes you don't realize it, but the life that you're living is so aspirational for someone else.
Sure.
You can have like a lady who's in her 50s with grown kids who looks at you and says, I wish I could have done that. So, that really taught me to be grateful with what you have in the moment. And I think that gratefulness is probably what brings more into your life.
Yeah. Do you believe in operating in a mindset of abundance? Because I feel like there's a lack mentality and then an abundant mentality. And my abundant one is always leads with gratitude.
Yeah. I lead with gratitude every single day. Every day. People are always like, you're so optimistic. It's actually quite
Because I wanted to
annoying.
Say, like, when I ask you something, like, you have to find what was the negative in that. And I'm like, watching you search for it, I'm like, okay, she's naturally optimistic.
I'm just a naturally optimistic person. Like, something bad can happen and I'll be like, oh it happened. Like, next, like, let's move on. Because there's so much good that you have, more good in your life that happens than bad. And you have to balance out. That's why I'm like, oh, Beauty on Tap is doing so well. I wonder what's going to happen. But I'm just like, no, nothing's going to happen, because this is what I'm ordained to do or purpose to do. So I'm just very optimistic.
How do you define purpose?
I think purpose is you being chosen as God's soldier to carry out his will. That's what purpose is. So for me, it's like, maybe God wants a beauty store in South Africa owned by a black woman. And he was like, who can I choose to do it? It's that person. And I think it's based on life trials and tribulations, you know, has this person navigated this a certain way? And is this the person that I feel
can carry this?
Can carry this.
Yeah.
And I think that's what purpose is.
Do you feel like everyone has a purpose?
I think everyone does have a purpose. And I think the beauty of life is journeying and finding that purpose. Mm. Sometimes you only find that purpose when you're 80. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can find it when you're 5 years old.
Yeah.
But I think you only find purpose in being in being grateful.
Yeah.
And living a life of abundance.
Yeah.
Is when you start to open your eyes.
Yeah.
And see.
Yeah.
Oh, this is actually the purpose I am destined for.
Yeah.
So I think I always say to people, you need to open your eyes to what God wants for you.
Yeah, you need to be open.
And open to everything.
Everything, yeah.
Open to the bad, open to the good.
Yeah. Because
that's when it
stumbles on
you.
The silly, the small, the big, everything.
Like, just take it in because it's going to hit you and be like, this is what's for me.
Yeah. What do you think hinders people from reaching their full potential?
Not believing it's for you.
Mm.
Yeah. I think when you don't believe it's for you is when you fumble.
Hmm. So now, with that, I love that. Sometimes, how do you know you really believe it's for you? Because sometimes you can say it with your mouth, and that's why, remember there was that manifesting era?
Yeah, candles.
It's just candles. But not everybody gets, and not just things, but whatever the desire. So how do you know that you really believe something is for you, or you are... I don't know, like you're just saying it because underlying there's a fear.
Mm.
You know, for example, you know how they say insecurity is the loudest in the room. Like an insecure person will come in and talk, I've done that.
Yes,
and then
yes.
You know that, okay, that's not confidence, that's insecurity.
Yes.
So in the same way, how do you know that I've gotten to a place where I believe something is for me, or I'm just loud about it because underneath there's fear?
Yeah. It's what I said. It's if everything comes together and you don't know how, then it's not your doing. It's a higher purpose. Like I'm very spiritual.
Yeah.
If things just come together and it just works,
then
it's just like,
Yeah.
Like I get ideas in my mind like, actually, let's post this. And then it's like a great marketing and then like there's just sales. And I'm like, I don't just come up with ideas.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where ideas come from, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, I think ideas come from the source of creativity. I always go back to Genesis and God looked at the earth and it was formless and it was dark and it had nothing. And he thought, let there be light, let there be water, let there be humans who are going to make sure that this thing runs. And I look at myself the same way. So when I'm out of creativity, I'm just like, source of creation and source of creativity.
Exactly.
I'm going to need you to drop some of that creativity in me.
And exactly how the earth was put together, how everything, like the world is so perfectly built. Like everything is perfect.
And
like
abundant.
Water, plants, like everything just works.
Yeah.
If something is purpose for you, it's exactly the same thing. Everything just works.
It works.
It comes together.
What is the season of your life called?
I think the season of my life is called Lost.
Lost?
Yeah.
L-O-S-T.
Yes.
Okay, unpack that for me.
I feel like I'm in a place in life, in terms of my professional career business, where there's so many routes to take.
Sure.
And I'm kind of just like,
oh, which one?
Which one? Like, and it's just placing everything together and trying to still show up for everything.
Sure.
So I'm just in a, like, it's January and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm so tired. There's just like a lot happening right now. And I just kind of need everything to calm down, but it can only calm down once I've
centered
dealt
yourself.
Everything, yeah. So
okay,
lost but functional,
But lost is good, right?
Lost is good.
Yeah,
It
means opportunity. It means, you know how you defined purpose, like as being the chosen soldier.
Mm.
It means you're like, for me,
this
is not me unpacking your it means to me that you're such a good soldier that you're given all the work and you just have to choose which one you can show up for.
Yeah, that's where I am now.
Yeah.
And I need to choose, because I've also realized you can't do everything.
No, you can't.
At once. Yeah.
No, so. You can't do everything. I believe God, I always lead with like, if you're faithful with little, you'll be, if you're trusted with much, if you're faithful with the little, you'll be faithful with the big.
Yes.
So I think a lot of people get stuck with, and it pains me. It's such a question I always have to get into with my guests, is that people say, how do I find my purpose? What is my purpose? And I find it hard to almost unpack that there's some things that you just need to show up for.
Mm.
And it could be as simple as showing up for gym consistently.
Yes.
And those will unlock exactly. The purpose questions.
Yeah. I always say discipline. Consistency,
yeah,
and commitment to self is so important.
I think you just answered it then. Maybe the clues to unlocking or finding your purpose is discipline, consistency, and commitment to self.
Yeah.
Self-betterment.
Yeah. If you say you're going to do something for yourself, then
do it. Yeah. What is your routine? What is your daily routine when you're just like, I'm the girl.
You know my routine.
I want you to give it
all the time. So I gym Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Okay, every day. Yeah. You don't gym on Tuesdays?
I don't gym on Tuesdays.
Why?
I walk my dogs on Tuesdays.
Oh,
so that's kind of gym.
Okay.
Yeah, but I walk my dogs on Tuesdays. I gym at 6.
Mm-hmm.
I do like 1 hour, 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. What time do you wake up?
I wake up at 5:30, 6:30.
Okay.
It's kind of like inconsistent now.
Okay.
And then I come back, I make my shake,
yeah.
Get ready for work.
Yeah.
I get to work at like 10. I judge myself all the time because it's so late, but...
I know, but...
But I work till late because I don't stop working when I get home.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I go to work, I do my thing. I go home, cook dinner.
Yeah.
Do some work. We do it again
the
next day.
Do you read?
I don't read.
Really?
And it makes me so sad.
Do you listen to audiobooks?
I don't.
Do you listen to podcasts?
I don't.
So how do you feed your brain?
I read a lot of technical stuff.
Oh, okay. So you do read?
I do read, but I read like articles.
Oh, my friend reads articles and now she's in this thing of sending me articles. I'm like, girl, it's nice, but I read books.
No, I read articles. I read like stuff in terms of my industry. That's what...
Oh, that stimulates
That's
you.
What stimulates me.
Okay.
And I like watching, like I'm a very inquisitive person.
Ah, okay.
So every time I'm inquisitive about something, I'll go read and watch stuff on it and yeah, dig deeper.
Okay. As we're about to close off, what is one thing that you know about yourself that makes you smile?
I think I'm a nice person.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what makes me smile.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I'm a nice person.
Okay.
I think I have a good energy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And that's enough.
That's what makes me happy, yeah.
Okay, we're going to go to my wall of wisdom. Give me a quote or a Bible verse that you live by.
There was one I read the other day and it was saying, I've forgotten it. It was saying, it's kind of like God will give... The skilled won't have the job, but God will give you the skill to carry out the job. It was something like that. I need to find it.
Okay,
find it. I was just like, that is what I believe in. Is that?
Is it saying, wait, I'm trying to unpack it. Does it mean that you don't have to have the skill?
To carry out the purpose.
Yes, God will but give he will you equip you.
For Got the purpose.
You. All right.
I need to find it. I'll tell you.
Please.
Yeah.
A podcast or a book or an article everyone needs to read.
I read like once a year.
Okay, a book. Which book do you think everyone should read?
Seat of the Soul. I had it on my TikTok.
I have it. Oh my, I have it, but I don't know. I keep picking it up and then I try
that
to read it.
That is a life-changing book.
I'll be ready for it and I'll read it when I'm ready for it.
Yeah. You need to be, that's the thing. You need to be ready for it.
Yeah. When I picked it up, it was years ago and it just went over me and I was just like, okay, I'm not ready for it. Yeah.
You need to be ready for it and you need to be ready to do the work that it tells you to do.
Got you.
Yeah.
Okay. Fill in the sentence. A wise woman once said.
She who is kind will reap the rewards.
Mm. She who is kind will reap the rewards.
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah.
Is kindness a big value to you?
Very big. My mom is the kindest person I know.
Okay.
And her kindness doesn't have an LSM.
Sure.
Just because you know, like she'd always say to me, like my mom would have the longest conversations with like tellers at Pick n Pay.
Yeah.
And I then became their friend growing up.
Sure.
So my mom is the kindest person I know.
I love that. Mm. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Wait, last one. Words for 2024 for anyone who is feeling lost, confused, and purposeless.
Take it easy on yourself and restart.
Take it easy on yourself
and restart. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's it. It's a wrap.
Thank you for having me.
Girl Pow. Excitement is building as we gear up for our annual Unlimited Fest. If you missed out last year, don't make the same mistake again. So join us for two unforgettable days packed with inspiring speakers, incredible musicians, DJs, food, and a time and a half. This year is all about healing. Secure your spot now at www.unlimitedfest.co.za. Don't miss the experience of a lifetime. Unlimited Fest, where we heal, celebrate, and grow. See you there.